Hey, buddy, and we are back for the 279th time. Parish of the Patriots, I'm glad to have you here. We got a great show. I have a feeling it's going to be a great show. We're going to be doing something a little bit different. I know most of you are return members of the congregation. If you are new, I do appreciate you stopping by. I hope you'll listen to the whole show. Normally what we do, we will have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly comes in around the halfway point of the show. We're doing it a little different this week, y'all. I'm not doing that. I'm kind of meshing it all together. That's not a change in how I'm doing the show. This is just a one-off thing for this week because I've got some ideas jotted down I thought we'd get into, and they're going to kind of merge together. Stuff that fits in the first part of the show, from that we're going to wind up kind of continuing that discussion. It's going to get into the Christian-specific realm. So for today, we're not going to break it off into two different sections. I think it'll work, and I think it's going to make for some interesting discussions. I've got like a lot of stuff jotted down. I don't really do show notes, but during the week before recording the show, you know, when I come across ideas or things, I just jot them down like a line or two, and then we just freewheel discuss it. As we go through this, and I actually have several different things, including Christian specific stuff, that I'm hoping to get into all of it today. Probably won't, but we're going to make the effort. But with what I've got jotted down, I think we're going to have a really, like I said, I think it's going to be really interesting discussion. So bear with me through it. We're, like I say, it's kind of a one-off thing. Normally I break it off into two specific sections. But like I say, it's just not going to work that way. But I think this will work out great. If you do get something out of the show, I do appreciate it. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Really makes a difference to me. We have the ultimate privacy coin. We've got snail mail. Address is right there. Just figure out how. If you don't know how to address an envelope, ask your parents. Ask your grandparents. It's not too hard. You'll be amazed at how simple it is. You don't even have to have a computer. It's an amazing thing. And with that having been said, let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, dough for the show from Mr. T, our weekly supporter. Thank you, Mr. T. Very much appreciate it. As always, Grandpa Dan, sorry for the super erratic support as of late. I'm so far behind on podcasts, it's not even funny. But I have not forgotten about you. Just a wee bit overwhelmed. And that's from Jackie. Thank you very much, Jackie. And as to everything in between here, which I've left out in my usual hyper sense of protecting y'all's anonymity, I feel you. I've kind of, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of going through a lot of the same things that you're dealing with. So yeah, I feel your pain. Okay, we all got a lot of stuff like that going on. So yeah, I do appreciate you with all that going on, taking the time out still to to drop a little support. And the great thing about the podcast format is you can always catch up. I mean, you know, if you miss some, just jump into the current one. And if you have spare time later, you can always go back and give it a listen. So yeah, you know, they're always there. The podcasts are always there. It's a great thing. It's not like, I remember back in the day, you'd tune into your favorite show, you know, when if you missed it, you missed it. But it's not that way anymore. That's a good thing. Right before recording the show, I was sitting around just starting my first cup of coffee here. And I was thinking about, you know, the naivety of youth. And the naivety of those who, you know, think something like communism, you know, they listen to this, you know, and these ideas, and they think that somehow, you know, that's going to work out for them. I always talk about like libertarianism, and I say it's normal, it's perfectly fine to go through a libertarian phase, but if you're continuing to mature in your ideas, you should move on from the libertarian phase. It should just be a phase. You don't want to wind up my age and still clinging to, you know, this anarcho-libertarianism, because, you know, that's kind of an immature way of thinking. And likewise, young people will often idealize the idea of communism, because as it's presented, it's a very simplistic idea, and it seems like, yeah, that's the thing. And you see this pandered to in these election cycles. I cannot tell you how many times, just like I always criticize like how the Republicans, I can't tell you how many times the Republicans have said they're going to shut down the border and do something about immigration, and it never actually happens. Likewise, I cannot tell you how many times I have heard in my lifetime the Democrats say they're going to, quote unquote, make the rich pay their fair share. And yet you'll see people and they still believe this. They still think that somehow the system is going to, quote unquote, make the rich pay their fair share. You remember the ridiculous thing where Nancy Pelosi was talking about cracking down on these super wealthy billionaires hiding their money in offshore accounts and not paying their taxes. And her answer to that was she wanted to know if you had $600 in your bank account. If you did a $600 deposit, she wanted to know where that money, the government wants to know where that money comes from. As if your $600 going into your bank account has something to do with billionaires. This is communism as it's presented to the people in a snapshot. This system is never going to make the rich pay for anything. This system serves the rich. When these politicians and their lackeys or whatever come out and talk about, quote unquote, making the rich pay their fair share, you might be young and that might sound good to you. And I understand, I'm not being critical, but I'm telling you, as somebody who's been around for a minute, I've heard that my whole life. And the George Soroses and the rest of them of the world are still plenty rich. The Rothschilds still plenty rich. And yet everybody else continues to get more and more poor. Just like Nancy Pelosi with the $600 bank account, anything they put into place in the name of we're going to punish the rich, we're going to make the rich pay, it's always set up in a manner. These things are always very written in a very complicated way so nobody understands it. But it's done so because it's written in a way to where the wealthy are still just fine. It's always the regular people who are going to be punished. When they propose something, when they've come up with ideas, for instance, the inheritance tax, we're going to make sure that these rich people, they're not just handed a silver spoon. We tax that inheritance. And yet, the wealthy people of the world, the dynasty rich people of the world, they seem to be doing just fine. Their kids aren't going to be out there scratching out a living. It just keeps rolling, doesn't it? What those laws, what things like the inheritance tax have actually done is to ensure your slavery. And we're going to get into that. This is kind of what I wanted to get into. And I've got actually a different topic I want to get into, but I was just thinking about this before recording the show. And you know, people don't understand because it used to not be necessarily this way. When you grew up back in the day, and say you grew up, your family owned a business in town for generations. Say they owned the local feed store or the local market or grocery store was owned by your family in your town. Or perhaps you came from a family of farmers or ranchers. See, when you inherited the family farm, when you inherited that ranch, you didn't just inherit something. Like now, if people inherit their when people inherit their family's property, they're looking at, we're going to be able to sell it and get some money. But back in those days, when you inherited the family farm or ranch, you inherited so much more than just a few bucks in your bank account. You inherited a way to make a living. I'm going to use the farm and ranch as an example, but you could apply this to a family business. You inherited not just a way to cash out and buy a new car and that's the end of it. You inherited a way to make a living. You grew up on the family farm and you grew up learning. Your whole life was spent learning the trade so that when the time came, you already knew the ropes and you could continue on that tradition. A man who's working for himself in a business that he understands is a free man. He's not a hired man. A hired man is always going to be a form of slavery. It's just slavery under another name. But in comes something like the inheritance tax. Well, you add up a decent-sized family farm and the equipment and the things that have been accumulated and the house and all of that, you're going to get over that threshold for the inheritance tax pretty quickly. They'll count every little thing so that they can say, oh, yeah, you're over the threshold. We're going to tax the heck out of you. And what will happen is the family can't afford to pay the tax, so they have to sell the farm just to pay the tax. And yet, George Soros's son, he's doing just fine. He's just rocking along. He's not worried about losing their family wealth. You see, this is how it works. And the entire system is to make sure that you are not a free man who's just earning a living with his hands. You're an indentured servant. You're a slave. You're working for somebody else. You're living hand to mouth. This is just another way in which the system is sucking the money out. It's all being sucked up to the top, away from the people. Instead of inheriting a family farm, which you can go on and spend the rest of your life making a living and pass that down to your children, instead of being able to do that, maybe you inherit a little house in town. That's all that's left because your parents were just wage slaves. Like you're just a wage slave. And you inherit this town and you sell it. And maybe you have enough money to go buy a car and then it's just gone. And every time you spend the money, it just disappears. It's kind of, it's all designed to make sure the money leaves the town, leaves the community, leaves your family. And it's all being siphoned up to Wall Street. It's all being siphoned up to the banks. The entire system is geared to do that. I was thinking recently, and I need to wrap this up because I really want to get into talking to today. But it's kind of like I'm very familiar with the Walmart model. I mean, people take Walmart as just part of the American landscape. It was not before. And the way Walmart destroyed rural American towns. I watched this in real time, and I've got the advantage of perspective of seeing how they did. And the way the Walmart business model worked is they come into a town, they'll sell at a loss, they'll let people return things for cash with no receipt. They would let them, I mean, it was just ridiculous. They were obviously selling everything in the store at a loss and letting people do ridiculous warranty things for money and everything else in the name of customer service until they ran everybody out of business in town. Then the prices went up and then, no, you're not returning that. And if you don't have a receipt, get the hell out of here. It just went back to business as usual. But the difference is in a rural town back in the day, you had all these little businesses. You had all these little family-owned businesses. And as such, the money stayed in town. The guy that owned the feed store went down and bought his groceries from the guy that owned the grocery store. The money stayed in town. And when people came through town or perhaps were visiting or there was an event in town, it would bring a little more new money into town. But by and large, most of the money stayed in town. People were trading and selling among each other. And the money stayed in town. When the time of the year came for the rancher to haul his calves to the sale and he got a check for that, it brought that money came into the town. When Walmart would come into these towns, they pretty much already established this now. When Walmart would come into town, the money all leaves the town. Every dollar you spend at Walmart, 90 plus cents of that leaves town and it's never coming back. It's going to Wall Street, it's going to New York City, it's going to corporate. The money is sucked and siphoned out of the town. And the people are left. And now you have these destroyed, once nice, thriving rural communities are now just destroyed hellscapes. They're the white person version of the black ghettos in the cities. People would be like, man, look at that black neighborhood. And you go to any rural town and that's the white version. And it wasn't by accident. It was by design. If you travel through small towns here in Texas, for example, and you'll come into a town and it looks like a town from, 40 years ago, by and large. And it's a nice town and the people aren't strung out on meth. It just looks like a regular community. I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, if you pay attention, the difference between that town and the town next over, It's the white person version of the ghetto hood. The difference will be the nice town does not have a Walmart. The ghetto, white ghetto town, there'll be a big ugly ass Walmart supercenter right there on the edge of town. I just virtually guarantee it because that money leaves town. And again, the whole system is set up this way. You don't inherit a way to make a living. You don't inherit the family farm. It's all set up so that the money inevitably leaves. You sell your family, little family home in town, and what are you going to do? You're going to buy a car or something. The money will wind up eventually leaving. Where with a family farm, you grew up learning the business. Now you go to school, and then you go to college, and you're always, every generation is starting off from zero. You're having to learn from the very, very bottom as an adult. You're going, quote unquote, entry-level job. Entry-level job. You go into your entry-level job and you have to start from the very, very bottom every single time. So, of course, you're limited on where you're going to get with that. Where if you grow up in the family business, if your family owned the local feed store, you grew up. You were a little kid running around playing with your trucks in the feed store. You grew up learning the business, and when you move right into the business, you don't have to learn it. People always say, you know, I apply for this job, and they say I got to have experience. How am I supposed to get the experience if they won't hire me for the job? But see, you'd be 20 years old, and if somebody were to say, how much experience do you have in the feed store business? It's like, well, I got 20 years. I grew up. I run around with my Tonka trucks here in the feed store. See, the whole thing is designed to keep you basically from getting ahead. This is the system functioning. So when they talk about, oh, we're going to do this new thing, make the rich. We're going to make sure we're going to bring some equality. You notice now they're focusing on this quote unquote equity, and it's all about race or the sex stuff, you know, what kind of sex you're having. There's a reason they're doing that. Because after a while, they can't talk about some kind of, you know, equality in the system where people down here and regular people have a chance to get ahead. They used to talk about that, then it became so obvious that they're never going to do that. So they shifted the conversation to be all about race or all about what kind of sex you're having. That was intentional. It's a lot easier if they've got you talking about that versus talking about how come, you know, nobody has a chance to get ahead, to make a decent living, to have a future, to leave something more to their kids so that their kids have a chance to maybe move up a little bit in the world. That's the American dream, by the way, what we used to call the American dream. Now they turned it into just maybe you can buy a house someday in debt. Now, I wanted to get into the main thing I kind of wanted to get into here, and as we roll into the show, is the lies they tell. And you know how, like, so often the lies are just ridiculous. And it puzzles a lot of people. I see people a lot of times confused. And I've talked before, I've made the point before that, you know, a part of that is the more absurd the lies are, the more the more submission is required on your part, you know, to go along with it. And I really want to bear down on that in a different manner. I was thinking about this the other day. And I thought of I came up with a really good way, to illustrate the reason the lies are so absurd. Because you look at it, and sometimes it's just like, why? You know, I mean, why are they being so ridiculous with these obvious lies? Well, it is a form of control. And again, I think we've got a good way to illustrate this. And this is a topic that's going to morph into, we're going to eventually, I think, get into some Christian-specific aspects of this, because you have to understand what is going on. You can't, I keep saying, you can't really understand what's going on around you in the world if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of it. Now, what I want to use is just a starting point. It's just to set up the scenario, and then we're going to move on from it. But there was an episode, you may be familiar with it, there was an episode years ago, and God's been years since I saw it, But there was an episode in Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Captain Picard, he gets captured by this Cardassian, and Cardassian. Anyway, he gets captured. It's just, I was thinking of Kim Kardashian sitting there torturing Captain Picard. That would be a torture, more than likely. Could probably ask Kanye. Anyway, now I'm going to get off topic. I'm not going to let myself get off topic. Anyway, he gets captured. And this whole thing, I'm just setting up a scenario. We're moving on from this. Trust me, I'm not going to spend long on this. But it was something I don't remember. It was something like there were like three lights. And his captor asks him how many are there, and he says three, and he gets, I don't remember, you know, electric shock or some kind of horrible pain, and his captor says no, there's five, and they do this whole back and forth through the whole episode trying to get him to say that there's five lights. I want to use that setup. We're moving on from Star Trek now, but I want to set up that scenario because it works as a good illustration to understand what's going on around you, and more importantly, I think, where people are around you in this society, and the way they react, and the reason they react the way you do, and the amount of control. This allows the control. So I want to keep that scenario. Now, let's say, as our hypothetical scenario, bear with me, use your imagination. You have to use your imagination on this show. We're going to do this small scale because it's easier to understand small scale. But as we get into it, we'll discuss the ramifications of when you expand the scale to millions of people. But we'll keep it small scale because it's easier to understand. You have a scenario set up. You have 10 people, plus you have an authority figure, and you have two guards. So we've got a grand total of 13 people involved here in our little imaginary scenario. You've got 10 people and an authority figure sitting there. And these 10 people are there, and you have your three lights showing. And the authority figure asks the 10 people, you know, how many lights are there? And the 10 people look up and they say, well, there's three. And the authority figure says, no, there's five. Now, the 10 people are confused and they look kind of puzzled at one another. And they say, I don't understand what he's talking about. And they look, and maybe there's something hidden around. And they say, no, we're looking. We're quite sure there are only three lights. At which point, the two guards come in, grab two random people out of the group, and commence to beating the crap out of them. They beat the two people, and then finally drag their limp bodies out of the room. Now you're left with eight people. They're aghast. What is this? What did we just see? They're just shocked. Suddenly violence has shown up and this brutal display of violence. They don't know what to make of it, the eight people who are left. Now, having just witnessed, the authority figure once again presents the question, how many lights do you see? Because I say there's five. Now the people murmur amongst themselves and start to begin to say, yeah, well, maybe we're just not seeing something. Maybe you're right. Maybe there is only, you know, maybe there is five. We probably just aren't seeing everything that you're seeing, sir. Now, of our eight people, two are indignant, are angry of what they've just witnessed. And these other two stand up and they say, piss on you. What do you think you're doing? Who do you think you are? You think you can just come in here and beat the crap out of somebody and drag them out? Screw you. No, there's three lights. Who do you think you are? Once again, the guards come in and commence to beating these two who stood up. And again, the guards drag them out. And now we're left with six. When the authority figure asks the six once again, the six will immediately respond and say, oh, for sure, sir. How many do you say there are, sir? Five? For sure there's five. You wouldn't lie to us. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's five. And now you see the six The authority figure in this situation now owns something. He controls something. You say people say, oh, well, people are manipulated. They're tricked. He controls something vital. He controls their minds. You see, they can control a lot of things. But to have the ultimate control over a man, you have to control his mind. You've heard it said, you know, how powerful an idea is. Well, the implication of that, where do ideas come from? You see, ideas come from a man's mind. But if the authority figure controls your mind, he controls your ideas. The six are now complete slaves because they've handed control over their minds to the authority figure. And now it doesn't matter what the question is. You know, he can present to them a bright sunny sky. And he can ask them, what's the weather like today? And do you know what their response will be? Their response will be to wait in silence and say, well, what do you say it's like today, sir? And he says, something intentionally ridiculous. Well, it is cold and snowing today on this bright sunny day. It's cold and snowing, and they will immediately begin agreeing. Yes, sir, absolutely, for sure. Because now they don't have to think. And this becomes self-reinforcing because now no effort is required. Once they have surrendered control of their minds, no effort is required on their part. All they have to do is wait to be told what to think. Absolutely, sir. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And of the six, you have to understand, some of the six will know it's bullshit. You see, you're going to have people in your six who are of varying degrees. You see a scenario like this and somebody would say, well, in that situation, I would just tell them what they want to hear, but I know it's a lie. It doesn't matter. You still handed over control of your mind. Now, if you're six, some are going to be kissing ass to the authority figure, and they're going to be looking for someone in the other five there, somebody who's, he answered a little slow. I think he's questioning you, sir. They're hoping maybe they'll get a little extra pat on the head, a little extra favor. Now, an interesting thing would occur here. So you have your six. Suddenly, two strangers are brought back into the group. Two strangers who have no idea what is going on. And they come back into the group. And we go back to our original scenario. The original scenario where the people, you had some and the people were confused to the answer. The authority figure asks, how many lights do you see? And before, you know, because I say there's five. And the curious thing at this point now is your six that were left from the original group will immediately jump up and say, oh, absolutely, you're right, sir. There's five. Now, the two strangers who were brought in be confused. What is wrong with these people? They're looking at each other. It's like, man, I don't know what's going on with these guys. They're all just clamoring over one another, repeating, you're absolutely right, there's for sure five. And finally, the two strangers say, are you out of your minds? There's clearly only three. Now, what you would observe here, different from the beginning of our scenario, is now the guards don't appear. Because you see, now the guards don't need to appear. The six will turn on these two new strangers. And the six themselves will rip them to shreds, will rip them from limb to limb, will tear them apart. The authority figure sits back and watches this take place. He owns the six. He owns their mind. He controls their thoughts. He controls their thinking. He has utter and complete control over them. You hear people use the term looking at society today, and they'll talk about something being a humiliation ritual. But if you really think about it, it's a control ritual. Everything is set up to reinforce that control. And this has more. We're using a very simplistic illustration to make the point. You expand that and understand that the entire society is structured around that control. You go to school, and especially in college, they do not teach you how to think. They teach you what to think. Think about that. You go to college, and the way you're going to pass college is you sit there and listen to the professor tell you the proper things to think, and then when it comes time to take your test, you regurgitate what they told you to think. See, that's all a part of, that's the training. You know, you're taught the proper thing, and you'll see this illustrated. You'll see people sit here and talk about, well, you don't even know. I've been to college, and I've learned. You don't understand. You'll be like, well, why do you think that? What do you mean? I went to college. They told me that. I understand it. I have an education. I have a degree. Yes, but do you understand what you're saying, and why, you know, how is that supposed to work? They don't. They only understand how to repeat what they've been told. Now, I've intentionally used a small sample size here to make it easier to understand. So a few things here before we get into the next phase of this. Something important to recognize of why this works this way. At the beginning of our scenario, when this whole thing started, you had what? 10 people. An authority figure, two guards. What stands out to you about that? There were 10 people. When the guards came in and beat the crap out of the two and drug them out, the 10 could have easily, at any time, overpowered the guards and overpowered the authority figure. They were outnumbered 10-3. Those are pretty good odds. I don't care if the guards did have clubs and bats or whatever the hell. Batons. I don't care how much the authority figure banged on the table, they were outnumbered 10-3. And you can well bet the authority figure was quite well aware of this. At the beginning of the scenario, if the 10, that was the critical moment, had the 10 chosen to stand up for what is right, for the truth, had the 10 said the truth is more important to us than your threats or your proclaimed authority, there would have been no problem. They had these three clowns outnumbered 10-3. And even now they have them outnumbered 6-3, and yet they're no threat. At the beginning of the scenario, they did pose a form of a threat by their sheer numbers. But you see, now it's no problem. In fact, now the authority figure, now that you're down to the six, it's clearly demonstrated the authority figure really doesn't even need the two guards. You see, the six will do his work for him. Now, we have to expand. Now, I used an intentionally small sample size because it's easier to wrap your minds around and understand. But now, if you expand that out to millions and millions of people, you have to understand that they're all at a different stage. You still have those of us who are perhaps part of the two that come in later and are like, what are y'all doing? You're out of your minds. There's clearly only three. You have some that are just at the beginning and confused. They don't understand why everybody's going along with this. And you have a lot that are the six. A lot of the people you're going to run into when the truth matters to you, most of the people you're going to run into are going to be at some level of the six. Remember, of the six, some of them in their heart of hearts know it's bullshit. And yet some of them on the other end of the scale have deluded themselves because of the cognitive dissonance involved. They have actually deluded them. They believe there really is five lights because the authority figure says so. They've actually surrendered control of their minds to the point that they're convinced that they are correct. And anybody who disagrees is the lunatic. But understand that most people around you in this world, in this clown world, they're going to be of the six. You know, they might front otherwise, but most of them, when push comes to shove, they're going to be of the six. That's just how it is. So when you see them saying these ridiculous things, it's beyond a humiliation ritual. This is a reinforcement of the control. Reinforcement. Make sure the six stay on. Make sure they sit there and repeat same things. Make sure they come back and say the same stuff. It is a form of control because, again, the authority figure and his two guards, they're outnumbered. There's a whole lot more of the people than there are of them. So they have to control the people. And the best way to do that is to control their minds. Control their minds. You don't have to worry. You know what they're going to do because you have control. The ultimate control of a man. They can grab you and beat you and put you in chains, but they don't truly have control of you unless they can have control of your mind. They don't have control of your mind. They don't actually control you. They can control you physically, but they don't truly own you unless they control your mind. I hear doomsayers and people get discouraged and they will say, you know, there's no hope. There's nobody getting out. They feel powerless. But you're not. If you still maintain, you're not powerless. Yes, they can come and put you in chains and beat the crap out of you, do whatever they want to you physically. They can do that. But understand the reason that would be what they would have to come down to is because they don't control you. Understand feeling powerless and helpless in such a situation that they can do that to you. But you know what? They have a whole lot less control over you than those six that are sitting over there watching. Because the reason you are the target is because they don't have control of your mind. That's why there's a target on you, because you're the one saying, no, there's only three. Y'all are all crazy. The truth matters. There's only three. Yes, they can overpower you. Yes, everybody will turn on you. Yes, they'll threaten you. Yes, they'll do this, they'll do that. But they still don't have control over you. They can control you physically, but he still doesn't have control over you because you have not surrendered control of your mind. You want to know who's controlled? Those guys. The six that are over there looking and smirking and murmuring amongst themselves about how stupid you are. Should have just gave them the answer they wanted to hear. Those, they're the ones, not you in chains. Not you who's been targeted. You're targeted for a reason. They don't need to target the six. They've got control. They have absolute control over them because they control their minds. You have authority over your mind. That's what they want. That's the ultimate surrender. Again, before we move on to the next understanding of the truth here, if you expand our scenario out to means people, understand, people are going to be at various stages of this, but one thing you can count on is most of them are going to be part of the six. The six is the majority. Most of them are going to be on some scale of that. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if they might say, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, they're crazy. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. That guy's crazy. There is only three. You're right. You need to tell him something. And then when you speak up and all eyes turn towards you, you're looking at this guy, see if he's got your back. And he's kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't know what this guy is talking about. Yeah, he is kind of crazy. Be shocked by it. Most of them are going to be a part of the six. So it's just the way it is. Don't be surprised from it. Now, let's get to another important aspect. We want to understand. We pursue truth. We want to understand the world around us, you know, as we seek truth. Now, as we look at our scenario, we have to ask, as we try to overlay this on understanding the world around us, one has to ask the question, who's the authority figure in this world? I think we've done a pretty good job. I think this illustration works to understand how people act the way they do and the reason why they do and the amount of control. But who's the authority figure here? You see, you can't, how do I want to put this? A singular agenda pushed forward successfully has to come from an authority figure. Remember, With Satan, everything's an inversion of what God does. I was talking on a recent one of these shows. I was talking about how morality has to come from authority. It can't exist outside of a higher authority. And go back and listen to that show. But we discussed that. Morality comes from God because it has to come from a higher authority. Satan always acts in some sort of weird, twisted, perverted inversion of what God does. Like a really crappy knockoff. You know, like if you watch a really good movie and then like years later you hear there's a sequel. Only you're excited, but the sequel winds up being this crappy knockoff that's almost a parody of how good the original was. It's kind of the way Satan works. It's always this inversion of what God does. A singular agenda has to come from authority. It can't come from a panel of different people because it falls apart. Tasks get delegated to individual people or a group of people, but the central drive, when you see things moving forward successfully in a direction, it comes from an authority. If you're in college, say you're in college or you're in school, period. You're in school and you get a class assignment and they split you off into groups of five and say your groups of five have to tackle this as a project. And each of you will have an equal say in how this project. You probably, regardless of your age, you have the experience to know that you don't get anywhere. And it, 9 times out of 10, it turns into a mess. And out of your groups of five, the groups that do well are what? Well, if you look at that group, one person took charge. There was one person that took charge, said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You do this, you do that, you do that. And then everybody falls in line. And that group would do pretty well. The groups that are each one has an equal say because we're going to be a democracy or something, they don't get anywhere. Because everybody's got their own ideas, their own agendas, what they think's important. Some people don't want to do anything at all and are just hoping that they can ride your coattails to success, and so on and so forth. The point being, a successful agenda, when you see things moving forward step by step and progressing, whether they're progressing in a direction that's good or not, is irrelevant. When you see that, that comes from authority. It always comes from a central authority. Somebody is making the decisions. So again, we ask, who's the authority figure here? At the end of the day, when you get behind all of the different faces, it is Satan. It is the devil's agenda. And I really want to hone down on this because people just sit there and say, well, then you start with that devil talk. I know it's the globalists. I know it's the Rothschilds. I know it's the Freemasons. I know it's the Illuminati. I know it's the Jews. While these different players have a role to play, again, we come back to the things you can observe in your life. For something to move forward successfully, there has to be a central authority figure making the decisions. Yes, tasks will get delegated to others. Anybody in authority understands you have to do that. You know, if you're a boss at your job, you know you have to delegate tasks. You can't micromanage everything you do. You wear yourself out and nothing gets done. Because as soon as your back's turned, they're off doing something else. You have to be able to delegate tasks. And yet the vision has to be provided. The central command has to be there. It has to come from an authority figure. There's the inversion. Just as morality has to come from authority. Just as morality has to come from God, this agenda of degeneracy, this agenda of destruction also comes from an authority figure. You see things keep moving in the same direction. How is that? You can't do it by committee. Yes, these other groups, these other people may play part in that. You know, I'm not saying they don't. But where's the central authority figure? You know from your own experience, if you do a democracy and that, well, they're just as a group, they'll all decide together. No, there has to be somebody telling the group, this is what we're going to do. There has to be somebody driving the group. It has to come from a central authority figure. There's where stopping at these other aspects, these other groups. This is where it always falls short. You'll see somebody say, well, it's the Jews. And then somebody say, no, you're an idiot. It's the Freemasons. No, we were both crazy. It's the Illuminati globalists. It's the lizard men. It's whoever. It always falls short. And it falls short because it stops at, well, where are the orders coming from? Who is organizing all of this? And people wind up arguing with each other over who it is, because they can't. You always come up short if you don't understand. You come up short because on a certain level, people understand there has to be somebody at the top. There's got to be somebody at the top. There's got to be somebody calling the shots, setting the vision. You know this. You know this from your personal life, from your work life. If you're going to get a project done, somebody has got to be in charge. You will not get anything done if nobody's in charge. Whether it's two men working together or 10 men working together, my gosh, imagine an entire empire working together in the same direction. There's no way anything is getting done unless somebody is in charge. Somebody's got to be calling shots. Somebody's setting the vision. Somebody's giving the orders. It's written in one of the prophecies. The angel, it talks about the angel was late getting where he was going because he was detained by the prince of Persia. It's not talking about a human prince. See, this is referring to this delegate. See, the angels that followed Satan in rebellion, you see, he delegates certain tasks to them. And then they're going to at some point in time, it has to be crossed into the mortal realm. And you're going to have those who are also going to be tasked to carry out certain roles in this world. It's got to be delegated out, but it has to come. I'm sorry, that binding vision has to come from an authority figure. And you see things when you see things moving on a scale in the direction they are. I'm not saying it's a good direction by any means. That kind of success has to, it can only come from an authority figure. You see it in governments. A government that has a strong central authority figure will have a vision and will move towards that vision, move all these people towards that common vision, good or bad, successfully. A government run by committee will be chaotic, because you've got too many people trying to do their own thing. It's all a matter of scale, like our original illustration or your class project in your school. It's the same thing. You cannot move things in a consistent direction by committee. At the end of the day, yes, tasks are delegated, but at the end of the day, there has to be a central authority figure. Now, I want to get a little bit into this inversion aspect. We make jokes about, because it is kind of funny in its own way. It's humorous. But on the serious side, you have to understand the inversion. We make jokes about and observe that is a nation, when a nation submits and decides to side with the American Empire, what is just like clockwork? One of the first things they do is they start passing all the gay stuff. You know, people laugh about it, you know, it's like call it the anal empire, because like consistently you see a nation that's on the fence. They don't know. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, no, we're on team U.S. We're on team USA. And immediately they begin passing laws about all this alphabet agenda. The rainbow flags go up. You see, it just as with Christian believers, we confess the truth. And we say these things. There has to be a confession, and you which means you were speaking of the truth. You were speaking of Jesus Christ with your mouth. Satan has that inversion. There's a reason. And when a nation decides to come under the empire and submits to the empire, what's the point of making them then immediately start adopting all of this rainbow stuff? What's the point of that? You see, it's an inversion. They have to confess with their mouth. This is their public confession. It falls on individuals. Again, as a Christian believer, we speak of the truth. We speak of Jesus Christ. And in this we confess his name before men. We confess his name in the way we live our lives. Why is it when you see these successful, quote-unquote successful, entertainers, singers, and in virtually every one of their videos, they're doing the triangle, holding the triangle up over the one eye. People say, see, it's the Illuminati. Why does the Illuminati need them to dance around to do that? No, it is a confession. They are confessing their false god. They are confessing, you know, they are confessing Satan. It's the inversion. The Christian believer confesses the truth, confesses Jesus Christ, not just with their words, but by the way they live. And yet people are confused. I see this new singer and they're dancing around up there naked, riding a giant dildo like it's a pony. And every one of them always putting the triangle thing or holding their hands in a certain form and doing the one eye symbol and every one of them doing the same thing. Why do they all do that? And somebody will try to, well, they're just, this is their way of trying to be edgy. No, no. It's a reason. See, Satan is an inversion. You have to confess your mouth. If you fall, if you give yourself to Satan, you too have to confess his name to the world. This is their public confession. They can't take it back. They have publicly confessed that they have taken a side. Because you see, this fight, what we talked about today, this illustration, it's the same thing. This is the same battle that hasn't quit through millennia. It's the light versus the dark. It takes on different forms. Different actors are involved. Different governments, empires rise and fall. People come and go. People live and die. People get wealthy. People get broke. People are at different stages of their life. It is the same battle. It's not ended. It's just the latest manifestation of it. Whether it's a nation or an individual person, Satan requires a public confession. You see, it's because it's that requirement. It's an inversion. I always talk about, I think one of the most important things to understand is the things that are actually of Satan. Not just, because people will do wicked things of their own. And there is a difference between just the evil and the wickedness of men versus things that are actually oriented from Satan. Satan will always give you a choice. He may make it as difficult a choice as possible. If you went back to our scenario, the people who chose to stand up and say, no, that's not correct, I'm going to stand for the truth, it was a difficult choice because you, at this point, you knew you're going to get the crap beat out of you. But you still have a choice. He can make it difficult. He'll lie to you. He'll try to deceive you and trick you. But it's always your choice at the end of the day because he has to be able to accuse you. He wants to accuse you. He wants to point at you and to be able to say, look at this. Look at what they did. Look at what they are. Made in the image of God? Is that? Look at that. They themselves are the blasphemy. Satan will always give you a choice. That's why he always requires a confession. He wants you to make that choice. And people that aren't aware of this, they'll convince themselves, just like the six. Well, we're just going along with, I don't believe in any of this stuff. You imagine making a deal with some music outfit, some music recording company or whatever. And like, it's time for your video. And they're like, well, it's time for you to dress up and ride this dildo. And be sure you do the triangle thing over your eye. And you need to, and you might be thinking, well, why do I need to do that? You know, but yet you do it. It's degrading, but you do it. And you'd be trying to convince yourself, well, it doesn't matter. I don't know why they believe in all this stuff, but it's a whatever. I'm getting mine. I'm going to get some money out of this. I'm going to be a celebrity out of this. When you confess these things, you speak a reality. I'm going to go ahead and get off into a little bit of something related from that note. Be careful what comes out of your mouth. When you have a thought in your mind and it's kicking around in there, that's one thing, you know, because you have to work through things at times. But be really, really careful what comes out of your mouth, because you're made in the image of God. And when you look at the creation, when it speaks, when it's spoken of God creating the world, what first there was the Word. God spoke time into existence. He spoke it into existence. You were made in the image of God. God created man in his own image. This tells us if God spoke the realm of time as we understand it into existence, then your words as well have power. Does that make sense? No, you're not going to speak time into existence. You don't have that kind of power. But understand, your words hold a certain amount of power. Be really, really careful about what comes out of your mouth. Pay attention. If you're struggling with sin, step back for a minute and pay attention to what comes out of your mouth. You know, if you struggle with drinking too much, how often do you catch yourself speaking, "I need a drink"? And when you do say, "I need a drink," does the urge become stronger or does it lessen? Does it increase or does it decrease? You see, words have power. When you speak things, be especially careful about things that start off with "I am" or "I would." You know, when you catch yourself and say, "I would," "I am," anything that starts with those two things is going to be especially powerful because you're speaking it. You're speaking it about yourself. You're speaking it into existence. And even if later you're like, "Well, I didn't really mean that," you're giving it a certain amount of power, a certain amount of sway. I'm telling you, be careful. Psychologists, psychiatrists refer to this as your inner monologue. They'll say it's the things you tell yourself. But that just scratches the surface. It comes back to the point of, if you were made in the image of God and God has the power to actually speak time itself into existence, then your words too have a certain amount of power. Be careful what comes out. You're going to have things come into your mind. You're going to have things come into your heart. You're going to have, you know, things kicking around in your head. That's just a part of life. You're going to have those things you're dealing with. Just be careful about what comes out of your mouth. Just keep your lips shut. You know, deal with it in your head. Be careful. Don't blurt something out. Be careful. The devil will try to coax you into saying things out loud because those things get power. Once you say them, you can't unsay them. You hear that, you know, you've heard that said before. You can't unspeak something. Once you speak something into existence, you can't take it back. You can't unspeak it. And this, you could reference back to our original illustration. There's a reason the authority figure requires them to speak it, to answer the falsehood with the falsehood, to repeat the falsehood, because of that power. If they're just sitting there thinking to themselves, "What am I supposed to say?" But he doesn't have power. See, they have to make that choice, that submission. They speak it. There's a reason he requires them to answer. He gives them an obvious lie to an obvious truth. That is later, the more control he has, the more ridiculous the lies become for that very reason. And then he requires them to go along. He requires them to speak it back. "What's the weather like?" "I say it's snowing and cold on this bright sunny day." And they speak it back. Those words have power. They have spoken it out. They can't. They have confessed it. They have also professed. They've repeated the lie. They've submitted to the lie and have confessed their submission to the lie. Think about it. Next time you turn on the network news and these actors are sitting up there with their scripts, looking in the camera with as much sincerity as they can muster, and they speak these lies at you, and these ridiculous, obvious lies at you. Think about what that means, what that person is doing, what that public confession that they're making. They can't take it back. There's a reason the lies are ridiculous. And hopefully, with what we've discussed today, it makes it a little clearer of why that is. There's a reason that the narratives they give are so stupid and they require you to go along with them. There's a reason. There is an actual reason, and it's all about control. And again, you can't understand, you can't truly understand all of this is going on if you don't really wrap your mind around the spiritual aspect of it. Because again, at the end of the day, it's the same fight. It's light against dark. It's good against evil. We'll wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the show today. I hope it was somewhat coherent. I think I managed to wrap it up to into a coherent bundle. I do hope you got something out of it. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. I enjoyed the discussion. I hope you did too. And I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.